Well, yeah, I mean, the housekeeper they brought. She goes back and forth with nobody else.
My daughter's housekeeper, Alexia?
Yeah, she tried to scratch Bedard's eyes out, but he promised her that if she didn't do what he said, he'd kill your daughter or worse. He bit a lip and then looked up at me. Hey, man, I'm so totally ready to get the fuck out of here. I stared at him, and the next words came out in a rush. This is too much. I mean, the guy is loco, you know what I mean?
Yep.
He shrugged a shoulder, lacking the means to gesture. I might as well be a prisoner around here myself, and there doesn't seem to be any kind of retirement program in the outfit, if you know what I mean.
I do.
His eyes suddenly became more intense. Get me the fuck out of here, and I'll do anything you want.
I thought about it. Is this the communication center? I glanced around at the banks of equipment. All this?
Yeah.
Is there a phone? One that'll reach the U.S.? He smiled.
You mean like the one you drop a quarter into?
No.
Well, that's disappointing. Dude, I've got satellite. Ultra-high-speed internet, 6G, high-def.
He nodded toward the widescreen TV behind me.
I can personal interface you with anybody in the world in seconds.
He laughed.
All I need is a phone number, email address, anything. Who do you want to talk to?
Pulling out my wallet, I extracted FBI Special Agent in Charge Mike Magruder's card and started to hand it to him.
I'm assuming you can do this with one hand?
He sighed.
Slowly.
Right or left?
Left.
Figures. I pulled the case knife from my back pocket, flicked it open, and slid it through the nylon tie, releasing his hand as I stood and moved to the side, pushing him back to the table with my hip and placing the Fed's card on the desk in front of him.
Make magic.
His fingers swept across the keyboard before reaching out and pulling the headphone plug free. Immediately I heard a ringing, but the TV remained black. After a few more rings, the screen suddenly leapt to life and we were treated to the foreshortened image of Magruder's face, in what I assumed was his office in El Paso.
Whoever this is, you better have a damn good reason for bothering me when...
Peter Lowry looked up at me as I leaned in over his shoulder.
Do you want them to see us?
Sure. He hit another key, and there was a blip as Magruder stared at the screen, silent and unmoving. I glanced at the electronics expert.
Did it work?
My answer came from the FBI man.
Holy Mary, Mother of God!
I grinned my most becoming smile and tipped my hat.
Howdy.
His eyes darted above the screen and around his room as people began crowding him, along with a dark-haired woman with gorgeous, tarnished gold eyes.
Where in the wide world the fuck are you?
Chapter 9.
It was that maniac Guzman.
Magruder buried his face in his hands.
I never should have put the two of you together.
I lowered my head so that I could be seen, even though I had no idea where the camera was.
Mike, there's no way you would have let me do what I needed to do when I needed to do it. And he was very helpful, along with a number of other people.
He peered at me through his fingers.
What other people?
Other people on a purely unofficial basis. I gestured toward the blonde Rossifarian.
Peter Lowry, for one, who has agreed to help me so long as we don't pursue further prosecution against him.
What? Who? What?
Try and stay with me here, Mike. Is the seer with you?
At this juncture, no, I deemed it irresponsible to have a blind, legless soothsayer along at this stage.
Irresponsible? Irresponsible? I'm glad to hear at this stage that there's anything you deem irresponsible.
Vic pushed the FBI man aside.
I repeat, where in the wide world of fuck are you?
I tried to remember exactly what Aiden had said to me.
Farther south in Bedanos de Samalayuca Nature Preserve, in a place called Estante del Diablo, a monastery. Monasterio del Corazon Ardiente, near a town by the name of Torero.
I glanced at Lowry, still attached to the chair, rather proud of myself. How was my pronunciation?
I couldn't understand a word you were saying, man.
I gestured toward the computer. Can you give them the coordinates of this place? He reached across and began typing.
I can give them the coordinates of this room.
I glanced at the screen as Vic crowded in again.
What's the current situation?
Difficult to say, I glanced at Lowry. I've just arrived and I'm inside. I lifted the AK, heavily armed, and I'm getting ready to do a little reconnoitering to try and find out exactly where they're keeping Katie.
Stop!
Magruder stuck a finger out of the screen. Whatever you're doing is going to get you killed and possibly create an international incident. Now that we know where you are, we can come to you.
When?
He hesitated. Well, we have to negotiate things with the Mexican authorities.
I shook my head. Can't wait that long.
It's a foreign country, Walt. We have to go through channels.
Mike, it's Katie. I need to get to her now.
Just give me a few hours.
I gotta go.
Can we contact you through this number?
His eyes played across the screen.
What is this number?
I glanced at Lowry again, who shrugged.
It's a private server and IP address, but I can unblock it.
Vic interrupted. How are you?
I'm okay, but the fun's about to begin. And I wish you guys could be here with me, with a team of Navy SEALs, a squad of Army Green Berets, or a patrol of MARSOC Marines.
She glanced at Magruder and then gave me a curt nod.
We're on our way to you now.
I felt better with that thought.
Be careful. These guys are kind of ruthless.
Vic leaned in, her dark hair swinging forward like a curtain on the third act.
So these motherfuckers are soon to learn, are we?
I watched as Lowry typed some more, and then, when he hit one final key, the civilized world disappeared. Taking a deep breath, I stood.
Okay. Which way is up?
He was about to speak when there was a heavy knock on the door behind me. I raised the AK and flipped off the safety lever. Then Peter lifted his hand and motioned for me to step back toward the wall behind the door. I did as he directed, but kept the rifle aimed at whoever was on the other side. Lowry hit a few more keys, and the video game materialized back on the screen, frozen in mid-submachine gun blast.
Yeah?
The door opened about halfway, and a man with a thick Mexican accent grunted,
You okay, soldado?
I watched as Peter gestured toward the screen.
Yeah, just catching up on my mad game skills, jefe. Right, you gonna show me those tricks to get me to Arma Battlefield 2?
Yeah, I'm just a little busy right now.
You coming to the party? It's getting wild out there. Lots of puta puntang.
Maybe later. There was a long pause.
Amigo, why is your hand tied to the chair?
There was an even longer pause.
Because I'm right-handed, and sometimes I immobilize it and force myself to play with my left so that I can get better with it.
I thought you were left-handed.
No, right.
The man leaned against the door jamb.
I sometimes do that when I beat off.
Yet an even longer pause.
Cool. Hombre Cabeza is making an announcement later. Make sure you don't miss it.
Not on my life.
Don't joke about that.
Yeah. The door closed, and we both listened to his footsteps fade. And I sighed, stepped away from the wall, and whispered,
That was very well done.
Yeah, and more information than I really wanted. Taking Henry's knife from the small on my back, I slipped it through the nylon zip tie, freeing his other hand.
There isn't any back way to the second floor, I suppose.
No,
he thought about it.
I mean, there's a stairway outside in the plaza by the front door, along with the one on the inside, but there are armed dudes there at the base of the inside stairs, and there's supposed to be two more at the door upstairs.
He looked at me.
Why don't you just wait, like they said?
Not of my nature. I returned the stag-handled bowie to the waistband at my back and glanced at the door. Is there anything that would get those guys to move?
Not really. There was a guy that fell asleep.
Yep, I've heard the story. Going to the door, I looked back at him. What about food or a changing of the guard, and how many guards are there, and do they know each other?
I don't know, man. I know there's a turnover because Bedard keeps killing them. That's the head of security's deal, Culpepper.
You meet him yet?
He can be a real pain in the ass. But you know, I haven't seen him around lately. Shit, maybe Bedard killed him.
Maybe. I threw a thumb toward the corridor. Are there any rooms across the hallway that face the plaza? So I can get a look-see. I mean, ones that aren't full of armed, dudes. The rooms at the end of the hallway are used for storage, but they're mostly unlocked.
Nice security you've got here.
He smiled and shook his head.
Nobody steals from Hombre Cabeza, man. You know how he got that name, head man?
Because he's the boss?
No. Because he skins the faces off of...
I've heard that one, too.
He looked at me questioningly. About the soccer balls?
Yep.
He shrugged.
You don't scare easy, do you?
Nope.
Yeah, there's nobody in this wing but me in storage.
I cracked the door, and the sound of the drums, horns, and crowd resonated through the building. How long does this party last?
Tonight and tomorrow. Or as long as the crack, marijuana, cocaine, heroin, alcohol, and overly active libidos hold out. Then they have the auction.
The what?
The auction will be tomorrow night after everybody is good and wasted and ready to spend some money.
What are they auction?
He looked at me like I was the last passenger on the last bus from Dumbassville.
You don't want to know, man.
I'd moved a number of the boxes that were covering the windows from one of the rooms in the corridor so that I could see part of the plaza and to give me cover in case anybody happened to come in. There were shutters, but I adjusted the louvers so that I could also see the stretch of the wall where Aiden had lowered me the beer. I was thinking about the auctions and the bodies on the other side of the wall behind the barn, the unfortunates who I guess hadn't been lucky enough to have found a buyer. Evidently, it was the way Bedard got rid of unwanted employees or people who had fallen into his hands whom he had no use for. Lowry said the sale was usually held once a month, but that this one was a big one. I could only think of my daughter upstairs and what he had in mind for her. Watching the young people through the shutter, I shook my head and wondered if they knew what kind of game they were playing. Maybe that's the way it was here, that life had little meaning and the span not so great, so you might as well have a good time while you can. The tiny portion of the Day of the Dead torchlight fiesta that I could see was in full swing, with everyone either with garishly painted faces or wearing skull masks. They were drinking and dancing and pawing each other, and I was wondering what I could do to get Aiden's attention if I saw him. I had kept the empty pony bottle, because even in this hellhole of trash and death, I hated to litter. So thinking of how he'd gotten my attention, I reached into the gym bag at my boots and pulled out the bottle and some twine that had unraveled from the hemp rope I'd thrown together to climb the building. There was enough of the stuff to tie around the bottle and slip it under the bottom of the shutters. I tied it off on a loose nail head and waited, hoping that if he walked by, he would notice it. The drums and the horns continued playing what sounded like the same song over and over, and I rested my head against the stone wall, which is cool, and felt good. I looped the string around my finger, and it closed my eyes for what I thought was just a moment. Then I felt something pulling at the bottle. Aiden wore a skull mask and top hat. He was carrying a torch and was looking around, refusing offers from quite a few women and quite a few men. There was an old oak barrel in front of the wall, and he grabbed it, tipped it, and rolled it in front of the window. Standing on it, he pretended to watch the festivities from a higher vantage point. He turned his head, speaking from under the papier-mâché mask. "How do I look?"
"Like a dead Fred Astaire."
"What are you doing in there?"
"I found a way in, and we've got someone on our side."
"Who?"
I hunkered near the window. "What does it matter? We can use all the help we can get."
"Just remember what your friend said about not trusting anyone."
"Well, he let me get a call into the FBI, and they're on their way."
"When?"
"Well, they weren't exactly clear on that."
He leaned back.
"With what?"
"We didn't get to that part either."
He sighed and looked around, still selling the idea that he was watching the festivities.
"We will stick with the original plan in hopes that we can get out of here with your daughter and our lives. Have you found where she is?"
"As near as I can tell, it's like Culpepper told us. She's on the second floor, but heavily guarded every step of the way."
"Ideas?"
"I've got one, but it's not the best." He turned his head once more.
"So it's a bad plan?"
"Better than no plan at all."
"Not necessarily."
"Do you think you can get inside the building?"
"Maybe."
"Can you get a few more masks?"
"Probably."
"There's just one more thing. We need another guy."
"This is a bad plan, man."
"Just put your mask on while we figure out where to put all your damned hair."
I stepped the dreadlocks into the top hat and pushed it down on his head.
"There. Your own mother wouldn't know you."
The skull mask rattled as he spoke. "I never knew my mother."
"Well, there you have it."
I turned to glance at Aiden, who looked much more convincing than Lowry.
"You're sure you can't find somebody who is really Mexican out there?"
He glanced around the communications room.
"In his group? That we can trust? No."
"So what all did you find out?"
"Not a lot. Bedard is supposed to be making a celebratory speech later this evening, but the party goes through tomorrow, and tomorrow night there's the auction."
"I heard about that. And so the aftermath on the other side of that wall, behind the sale barn." He turned to look at me.
"We should probably get your daughter out of here before then."
"Agreed." I opened the gym bag and took the magazine from the AK and began pushing the rounds out, emptying it entirely. After reattaching the magazine, I handed it back to Lowry.
I get the rifle, but no bullets?
I gestured toward the computer screen. I've seen you shoot. You're lucky I let you carry one at all. I turned back to Aiden. You still have your pistol? He pulled it from his trousers.
Yes.
I nodded and began sliding zip ties onto my wrists until there were about a half dozen on each arm. There, that should work, unless they get really curious. I looked up at them. Okay, here's the deal. We use the inside stairwell because there will be less spectators, but the trick is getting these guys down without alerting the ones upstairs. So no shooting. If they hear us, it's all over. Lowry slanted his head to one side.
So what do we use? Our scary masks?
You don't do anything. My friend here will take one, and I'll take the other. I turned back to the dock. Look, I know there are two men downstairs and two upstairs. But there might be more than that, so if you want to back out of this, now's the time. Aiden shrugged. Lowry glanced at him and then back at me.
Fucking there, I want out.
You don't get to choose. He gestured toward Aiden.
Why the hell not? He does.
I'm not paying him.
What are you paying me?
I nudged him toward the door. Your life.
A lot of good that's going to do us, spilling out here on the floor riddled with bullets.
I opened the door, picking around but not seeing anything. Come on. They followed, but I stalled out and turned to Lowry. You lead, but let Aiden do the talking. He slipped by, plastering himself against the wall, and swiveling his head, looking all the world like a bad TV cop.
What are you doing?
Clearing the hallway, clear and sweep, man.
We're supposed to be acting like we belong here.
Oh.
I nodded toward Aiden to take the lead. He didn't know the layout of the building, but at least he wouldn't get us killed. We followed as I nudged Lowry to the rear. Keep the AK trained on me at all times, got it? He nodded, some of the hair creeping from under his hat.
Got it.
Aiden followed the hallway that led us to a larger opening that looked like it would lead outside, so he went through another smaller archway to our right. There were lights every 10 feet or so, electric ones now that we approached the center of the building, which cast a golden glow on the uneven walls. If not for current circumstance, it was a beautiful place. Aiden suddenly pulled up short and held up two fingers.
Showtime.
I reached behind me, finding the muzzle of Lowry's AK, and pulled it into my back.
Come on.
As we rounded a corner, I could see that there was a stairwell leading to the right, and a landing where the stairs changed direction and continued up. The two guards were looking at us as we approached, and I held my hands together and my head down. A rough-looking one glanced past Aiden at me.
¿Qué está sucediendo? Tenemos el que el jefe estaba buscando.
He stooped a little to look under the brim of my hat.
¿Quién? El sheriff.
Ah.
As he finished the statement, Aiden hit the man on the back of his head with the pistol with enough force to practically kill him, and he dropped like a pole-axed steer. I threw myself at the other one, slamming him into the wall and knocking out his air. Grabbing the Kalashnikov from a stunned Lowry, I popped the guard on the side of the head with its butt. Unbelievably, both men started to stir. Aiden pushed me aside, and using a syringe, injected something into their necks.
What the heck is that? You have your weapons and I have mine. It's a concoction of my own making, and they will have wonderful dreams for the next 3 to 4 hours.
Handing the rifle back to Peter, I glanced up the stairs to make sure the activity hadn't brought out any spectators. Pulling a small bottle from his shirt pocket, Aiden reloaded the syringe.
Let's go. I thought we were in a hurry.
Aiden crept up the stairs, paused, and again held up two fingers. We caught up, and I assumed the same demeanor I had before, wishing I'd wiped a little blood from the men below onto my face to make the entire scenario a little more believable. When I made the landing, Aiden took me by the elbow and pulled me along as Lowry brought up the rear.
¿Qué está pasando?
The two men stepped from the wall by the door about halfway down the hall, the smaller one the first to speak. Aiden yanked me along, and I felt like we were getting pretty good at this.
El hombre buscado. Vamos a ver cuánto él está buscado.
The man laughed. The other man looked past us at the ludicrous figure of Lowry.
¿Qué estás haciendo con él?
We were getting close now, and he gave the impression that he thought something was wrong and began raising his weapon.
¿Te conocemos?
Slamming my arm down, I knocked the rifle from his hands and then brought an elbow into his gut and he collapsed. By the time I got turned, Aiden had the other man against the wall and was attempting to hammer the side of his skull with his pistol, but the angle was bad, so I reached out with both hands and simply slammed his head into the rock wall. As he dropped, Aiden took out the syringe and stuck this one as I turned and kneeled down to the one I'd hit, who was still trying to catch his breath. Rolling him over, I kneeled on his back and held him there till Aiden injected him as well. He shuddered once and then lay still. As the doc checked his pulse, I stood and tried the handle on the door, feeling the clasp give as I pressured it with my thumb. Turning to look at the other two, I could see Aiden was ready, but Lowry was standing a little down the hall, looking like he might run. Whispering, I motioned for him to move his ass. "Get over here!" He did as I said, and the two of them joined me at the door. The doc looked up at me. "Are you sure you want to go in first?" Pulling the Colt from the small on my back, I pushed the latch the rest of the way and swung the door open enough for the butt of an M16 to get slammed into my face with all the force of an angry mule. I clawed at the door facing to try to catch myself and was rewarded with another slug in the face and a dozen or so automatic weapons locking into place from all around us. The world was spinning and things started to go black, but I was aware of somebody raising my head and screaming, "Howdy, Sheriff!"
Chapter 10. My face hurt. My head hurt. Pretty much everything hurt. I tried to raise my head, but my neck muscles weren't cooperating. Besides, it was dark, and my left eye was pretty well swollen shut. The skin scraped off down to the end of my nose, which was clogged with congealed blood. I lifted my left hand, but there were heavy chains attached to it, and it was almost more effort than I could summon to get a finger to my nostril to do a farmer's blow, which I immediately regretted. I cleared half my nose, but it felt as if I might have lost a quarter of my brain along with it. I waited till the throbbing faded and tried raising my head again, this time getting a little farther so that I could see my boots at the end of my legs. A foot was dangling off to one side, and I thought it might be broken, but I moved my leg and it straightened out. My right hand was not so lucky, and as I stared at it resting on my thigh, I could see the forefinger was bent at an extreme angle. No way that wasn't dislocated. So I guess they had my gun. I started reaching for the wayward finger with my left hand, but a wave of nausea welled up, and I decided to wait a minute. I looked around. To my surprise, it was not a suite at the Brown Palace Hotel in Denver, Colorado. Instead, it was a stone floor, stone walls, and a heavy door with a tiny window covered with bars, which was the only source of light. I took a deep breath. The room was even smaller than the others we'd been in, with a thick coating of dust and cobwebs. I guess this particular cartel didn't go to great pains to incarcerate their prisoners, just took them out back and shot them. I was honored. I cleared my throat, not particularly because I wanted to say something, but because there was something in it. A few seconds later, someone's head, backlit by the hall light, appeared in the door's small window, and then disappeared just as quickly. I could hear some people talking in the distance, and waited, but didn't hear anything more. Deciding to while away the time by getting my finger back in its socket, I reached across and took hold of the tip, feeling a familiar, albeit excruciating, pain. I had dislocated a finger or two in my time, and sometimes it wasn't convenient to get medical assistance. I had learned the technique from Coach Cagle Curtis back in my offensive lineman years as a Durant Dogie. Folding the digit in a hyperextension, I pulled, and it popped back in place, just as I was about to puke or pass out. I took a big breath and just sat there, letting the waves of pain travel up my arm and into my head, which, already overloaded with pain, refused delivery. Ouch! I looked over my shoulder and could see that the manacles were attached to each other with a heavy chain that ran through an iron ring in back of me. Turning a little, I yanked on the chain, but the whole apparatus showed no sign of moving. There was noise in the hallway, closer this time, and I could hear someone inserting a key and unlocking the door. The massive wooden slab swung open, and I saw a familiar silhouette. "Hey, there's a new sheriff in town." I said nothing as he stepped inside and crouched down with the same rifle in his hands. "Damn, you look like hell." He didn't look so good himself, courtesy of the beating I'd given him in the abandoned bank building.
Back in my day, the stock on that M16 would have broken like a Mattel toy.
Yeah, they're making them a lot better these days.
He gestured with the space-age weapon.
I just can't bring myself to carry one of those Russian pieces of shit.
I grunted. A patriot.
Something like that.
He leaned in.
How's your head?
It hurts. He snorted.
Yeah, I'm in trouble for that. I wasn't supposed to mess you up. But I explained to the boss that you were a little hard to bring down.
Hell, at least I didn't shoot you.
Thanks. He flapped a hand, tucked the rifle in the crook of his arm, and pulling the fixings from his shirt pocket, began rolling himself a cigarette.
Don't mention it.
So how much of it was a setup?
The whole thing. I mean, not getting my ass kicked back in Torero, but everything since you got up here.
The patrol? He lit the cigarette and inhaled.
Think of it as collateral damage. One old man and a couple of kids. I'm assuming you killed them.
2 out of 3.
You let one live? He shook his head. You gotta get with the program, Sheriff. Hell, if you'd killed me, you wouldn't be in the mess you are now.
He extended the